Whew. I'm like someone squeezed me like a rag and drained me. I don't know. So many, too much beauty. Yeah. Too many tears of beauty. Very exhausting. Anyway, you know, we travel constantly. Actually, to be honest, we take half the year off. I mean, we have a rule, and it's very strict, 183 days, and we fight over every day, and cities fight over every day. We don't call it city representatives of DCI, they're called advocates, because they have to advocate for their city, and it's a big fight, and they all blame Mercedes, who has to do the schedule. But, so we see many places and we see many programs and we're in many programs and they're all many, all beautiful, extraordinary. I repeat that Guadalajara pulled off the best program ever. And I'm not afraid, I'm not ashamed to say it at Diamond Mountain, yeah. Mexico City's thinking about it. But anyway, for me, this program this weekend has been the sweetest of all. And I'm very happy and very proud of everybody. And sweet words and sweet thoughts and sweet deeds everyone doing towards each other. And it's awesome. And the board has been, it's been a hard year for the board. They are not paid. They do it all as volunteers, and they are legally liable. They can lose their homes, they can, their families can lose all of their homes, all their future income they can lose, and they are legally liable for everything that happens here. And they didn't, what do you call it, flinch. They served extraordinarily. And very difficult meetings, very difficult decisions, and very difficult to maintain the retreat. Extremely difficult, and they didn't even waver. It was kind of extraordinary. I mean, it was worth it just to watch them, you know. And it was extraordinary. And then the staff, they just. It seems like more people came and then more people worked harder. And people like Scott and Orit, they're doing the equivalent of two full-time jobs. Rob Russinger is also, he also does all the accounting, which nobody wants to do, much less be director. And it's extraordinary. And Nicole Davis is... I don't know, it's some kind of miracle that she came. Nobody could figure out a solar pump but her. And no, it's just some kind of weird karma that we have. Seriously, that someone who would want to help and who's probably the best I could think of at it just shows up and wants to do it, you know. She has, I think, a PhD work. She did PhD work in Tibet in geology. Why she wants to come here and look at rocks, I don't know. But you know, to serve for 6 years, and amazing. It's like a miracle, you know. And Chuck and other Tahia shows up. You know, there's nobody in the commissary on that day at all to serve, you know. She shows up. I mean, she just steps in, and yeah, I don't think you felt it. I think it was just she just did it, and she didn't say anything, and she didn't whine, and she's a real grandmom, double grandmom, or whatever. And just everybody, Chaz, thank you. Everyone, when they say we need some decent food, let's call Chaz. And everyone, Joe, thank you, and Chuck, everyone, it's amazing. It's a miracle. And all over the world, it's been 25 years now, ACI, 20 years in ACI, 25 in ACIP. Nobody gets paid, okay? There's a few, like one programmer gets paid and the refugees get paid, but everyone else is working for free. And the classes here for how many years? I don't know, 10 years have been free, you know? It's a free university. There's no charge, you know? And they just make it happen. And the buildings were built by people's sweat, you know? And millions of dollars, and they don't have money. It's like a miracle. The cabins, they built them. And there's a funny joke, you know, like Will, I remember Will, he's like, Geshe-la, I can't talk to you tonight. I'm like, why is this? I gotta watch YouTube. You know, I'm like, you know, I was kind of hoping I was more important than YouTube to you. And he says, no, don't get me wrong. I don't know what to do in my cabin tomorrow. You know, every night he would go home and study the next thing to build a house on YouTube, because he's never done anything like that, ever. You know, and then he's like, calls me up next day, he's like, well, we got a little problem, Geshe-la. You know, he's like, I said, what? He says, I poured the cement for the shower pad, you know. I'm like, well, what's wrong with that? And he says, and I washed it all down the drain. And the YouTube video didn't tell you that cement and drains don't go along, you know. So he poured the excess cement down the drain. And he had to redo all the pipes in his house, all the pipes, you know. And that was like that. It was like amazing. It was a miracle. And Lama Christie helped a lot. And Lama Christie pushed it through. And she was a hard ass. And she got it done. And I don't think it would have happened otherwise. And, you know, it's a miracle. And what they did, and then they know they're giving those cabins to other people. When they spent their last cent in their life, or borrowed their last cent, that's the payback's coming in. They just did it for other people, you know. And there will be many generations of retreatants here. We are not the first. I mean, we are the first, but we're not the last. And it's like Sarah, when Sarah was built, 1410 or something. They were standing around an empty spot of rocky ground outside of Lhasa, and Judson Kapa's like, anybody got any money? And everybody's, no. And they collected all their money. It was $14. And like six disciples. And he said, okay, we got to build a monastery, you know. And it has lasted for, 600 years. And it has turned out countless saints, countless meditators. And it's an honor to be here at the beginning, right? There's this picture at Princeton University where I went. There's a picture of the first day there. And there's a table with three guys sitting behind it with long beards, you know. And they look kind of clueless. But it's going to be beautiful. It's going to be, I don't know, I just see this thing when this weekend, I just keep seeing this recurring picture of what will be, you know. You to us, it feels very real. The present time seems very concrete. But actually, we are just the beginning of something that we will never see, you know. Other people will come and they will. When you come into this temple, you feel the power and you feel the energy, and everything goes better here, more amazing, you know. And the valleys like that. I had the honor to go see Will. He asked me to go see him, and I hadn't. Then I saw him. He looks like Jesus now. He's in extremely incredible state. He's doing a sort of a mixed Christian Buddhist solitary, real solitary. And I wrote him, I said, how long since I saw you last? He's like, 13 months, you know, it's been 13 months. And I went into his cabin and we sat down, and the valley itself has a strange cloak of silence over it. It's very weird. It's a very supernatural kind of silence. It's extremely silent in there, at least to me. Maybe in my three retreat, everybody said, "Oh, it's so peaceful in there." And he wrote out, "Yeah, like the Vietnam War was peaceful, you know." But there is a feeling of silence, and I visited several people's cabins and who needed to talk, and it was wonderful. And they're so beautiful. The cabins are so beautiful. Connie's is so beautiful from the outside. It's so cheerful. And everything, they have gardens. Everyone has gardens. And everything is well meditated. Every inch of the rooms are like worn down by meditation. You know, like the way stones get worn down when many people step on them. And then there's like this feeling of wonderful feeling of silence. And you don't notice it when you're in it. You see, it takes someone to come from the outside and say, you're doing amazing. You know, you may be chatting to yourself in your mind all day, but it's only half of what it used to be. You know? No, I mean, you don't see it because you're in it, right? You don't see it, but I see it. And it's extraordinary. And the level of mental health is extremely high, better than the rest of the world, I personally think. And I think it's something you can only achieve in deep retreat. And so I salute you, astronauts of the mind. And it's awesome. And the people who have dedicated their lives for nothing, they get nothing. They don't get money. They don't get famous. All they get is trouble, you know, and then more trouble. And then people, you know, anyway, pile more trouble on them. And they just walk around with these big dumb smiles on their faces like, I don't know, maybe they're taking something. I don't know. But I'm very proud of the place, and I'm very proud of everybody. And all things are both results and seeds, right? That's a Buddhist principle. All changing things are simultaneously both results and seeds. So it's pleasant, and it's an honor. And I feel extremely, what do you call it? Fulfilled my life to see you teachers, and see you teach. It fulfills my life. But it's also a cause of the future. It's also a seed of what will come. So, you know, it's a beauty to see what's already there. But things tend to multiply by the thousands and the millions. So what will happen? You know, we're planting these viruses, you know, these cute viruses. And no, I just imagine them going out, you know, like spores in the wind, and great things will come. And you can't imagine it, okay? You really can't imagine it, all right? We were sitting on the couch in Christine Walsh's house three and a half years ago. And we're talking about maybe doing something. And now regularly 1,000 people come to a talk. And it's just a miracle. It's just all a miracle. So what will come of your... I enjoy you both as results, and I enjoy you as seeds. I think the virus, the seed is even more beautiful, but the result is also extremely beautiful. And just to see, like Dennis's work, you gotta keep it up, okay? It's extremely important that this place should be physically beautiful also, you know? And flowers are some kind of magic that make people happy. And we need lots of flowers here. We need more. We need lots of gardens and, you know, flowers, okay? It's awesome. It's just awesome. I also forgot to mention, and I wanted to mention, on the way here 100 years ago, because it feels like that, right? You took us on some kind of transcontinental roller coaster. But on the way here, the reason we couldn't come till evening was we had to stop at the prison outside of Tucson. And it's called CCA, Corrections Corporation of America. So it's a private prison. And they import prisoners from other states because it's cheaper here. So we have onion fields there, and they clear 200 acres, and they put up barbed wire, and they And there's a prison there in like 6 months. They're building a new one. It's amazing. I think is it 3,000 or 4,000 inmates there now? In four separate prisons, which you can see from each other. And Nick and Jeff, especially Jeff Eddy, you know, and Nick Lashaw, and Nicole goes a lot, and other people go a lot. Rob's been going a lot. Rob's been also doing hospice work. But I think what you're doing academically is extraordinary. What you're doing on a meditator's level is extraordinary. The level of yoga in this community is extremely high, maybe the highest in the world. But then on the level of service, there's a lot of cool service going on. And the Guadalajara Sangha is unbelievable. They're running around everywhere serving people. And they did, you know, they do it stuff. They actually do stuff that I recommend, which is weird. And but the prison thing has grown. It started out with a couple of people, Deb Bai, right? And it started out with a couple of people, and we used to go to the state prison in Douglas, and it was hard. It was really hard. And what's happening now is it's spreading through all the prison system. And Jeff's work and Nick's work is just awesome. And we went there, and it was packed. The whole room was packed full of, I don't know, 60 or 70? I don't know. It was like at danger level. Like, they actually stopped the program for about an hour because it was getting too high energy. And it was awesome. Two guys want to become monks. And I don't know quite what to do with that. But don't tell them that, okay? It might look weird if the whole prison starts wearing robes. We have to call it a monastery. These guys keep saying, when I get out. And it's the same thing we hear at the prison. But it's awesome. The groups there, they're learning well. And when they meditate, they're the only competition you have, okay? When they meditate, the what do you call that? It's like a curtain goes down. And it's awesome. And they have trained them very well. And it's beautiful. And their yoga is good. Their yoga is really good. And they're into it. So they've converted. And they've converted the administration of the prison. And they're excited about. Everyone's like, hi, Geshe Mako. And, you know, thank you. And I'm like, I just come once a year, you know. And, you know, and they're like, whatever your people are doing, we don't know what it is, but it's changing the prison, you know. And they're in three facilities now, I think, three different parts of the prisons. They're spreading through the prisons. We almost have approval for a entrepreneurial training program, DCI program, by Christine Walsh. So it's awesome. So I wanted to thank you for that and for Rob's work in the Hospice of the Valley, which is one of the most successful hospices in the country, I think. And they love him, and he's doing good work. So I like that kind of stuff. All right. Okay, let's do some scripture anyway. And just Nick and, I mean, Jeff, you should know, they pull me aside, the prisoners pull me aside constantly and thank me for you. And so, you just should know that. They're constantly pulling me aside and thanking me, okay? All right. We're on a section called Tungsha Ki Sanam Sokshing Tu Yu Mu. So there are special angels, enlightened beings, who are in the confession business, you know, and they are like specialized in confession and you know, they deal with confession a lot of negative karmas. They are negative, old negative karmic seed wiper outer helpers. Okay, and they're all in the Dzogchen. Dzogchen is the huge This is the Dzogchen here, okay? The Dzogchen is the visualization in the Lam Rim of all the teachers of our lineage. The middle section is all tantric lineages, different tantric lineages. The section on the right and the left are the lineages of love and wisdom, right? And then these are all the various levels of people who are practicing spiritual practice. Some are Buddhas, some are almost Buddhas, like that. In the center is your own teacher. However you wish to visualize them, it's your own teacher, right? So inside this picture already are all of the enlightened beings who deal with confession, okay? But yunme means, those of you who are learning Tibetan, me means, admittedly, they are there. But, dear Nendengi Tsulki, Lame Tukane, Özer Soshitra. But here we should sort of try to, Nenden means almost like Marmahata. What's Marmahata? Neden Numba. To press a special point, it's important in the practice of Tantra, in the physical body, to learn to open certain channels by pressing them from the inside with meditation or like that. So Nenden means, Nenden here means you should force the issue a little. Don't be satisfied that there's a couple of confession Buddhas there. Let's force the issue, and from the Lame Tuka, from the main figure's heart, is another Buddha, okay? There's a Buddha in the heart of the main figure. From that heart come 34 rays of light, okay? So if you want to do a confession practice, I can think of two common reasons to do a confession practice. One might be that you've had a major boo-boo in your life, okay? And you want to clean it, you know? Like, you just decide one day, it's like deciding to clean out your closets and stuff. You just say, well, I'm going to get rid of that seed. Before it opens, I'm going to get rid of it. So there can be, you know, seeds that you want to take out that you remember, right? But I think for retreatants, there are extremely subtle seeds, right? Which are subtly causing you to plateau in your practice, right? If that's a common complaint of a long-term retreatant. It's like, I made great progress in the first 6 months, then I collapsed for 6 months, and then I kind of cruised, you know, and I'm up to a good level, but I don't seem to be able to make a breakthrough from there, you know? Bok Chimba, right? I don't seem to be able to put on the afterburners, you know? And also there's an accumulative fatigue in a three-year retreat, and I know. I went through it. And we didn't know what it was because we didn't have anyone to help us. Not really. So there's a fatigue which builds. It accumulates over the 3 years. And it doesn't matter how many breaks you take, or maybe it's because of the breaks. I don't know. But you get tired. It's just hard, you know, and it builds up. And it's extremely hard, you know. So in the final year, it's a struggle because you're exhausted. You have fatigue, and mental fatigue, spiritual fatigue. I think that might be a good time to do a nice confession practice, not for the big bad deeds you ever did, because you already cleaned those. You already worked on those. But there may be some subtle, what do we call it? Nengen Lemba, right? Nengen Lemba. Subtle negative, I don't want to call it a force, it's more like a fog or something. It's a subtle negative taint on your mind that keeps you from breaking through to the final goals. You see what I mean? So I think it might be nice to consider these practices in that light. Like, try one for, you already have 10,000 practices, try this one. No, try it for a week or two and see if anything happens. You know, that's what I would try. If I were you, I liked trying new things in my three-year retreat. You know, every 2 months I'd pull out a new practice and see if it did anything, you know. Okay, so 34 rays of light come out of that Buddha's heart. Dengok to Chu Chu, 10 rays of light go upwards and 10 rays of light go downwards in the universe, okay? Don't think it's in the ground, okay? Think it's south of Earth and north of Earth, okay? Got it? And then Ye Yin to Dun Dun, 7 light rays each to the left and right of Earth, okay? So towards the sun and towards Pluto, okay? Like that. You're covering the four direction, main directions. Then on those rays of light, usually on the ne means the tip of the ray of light in a visualization, you picture a throne on the end of each ray of light. Okay, like this, this is called a throne in Tibetan. Chi means a teaching throne. We call it a throne because we don't have the word. We don't have another word in English. You know, teaching platform maybe would be better. It's not like a king's throne, okay? It's a platform for teaching from, okay? So teaching platform, throne, 34 of them, right, are going out on the ends of the rays of light. And those thrones are held up used oftentimes by lions, right? But in this case, by elephants. Okay, so on the backs of elephants. So it's like instead of legs on the throne, you have four elephants sitting there very, what do you call it? Still. It's not like this, okay? And they are supporting the throne. That is partly a reference to the tradition that the world in Hinduism is believed to be held up by lions, 8 great lions. One of whom is called Naga, although he's an elephant, 8 great elephants. One of them is called Naga. So they're called the Nagas of the directions. Dik means direction in Sanskrit. Digital comes from that, meaning to point with your digit. And so Dik Naga, that's Chandrakirti's teacher, Master Chandrakirti's teacher. That's why his name is Dignaga. So anyway, you've got you've got 4 Dignagas, elephant, direction elephants, holding out those thrones. Okay. Langchen Dundo Shenle Topche We Gyutenki Te Shuti Dekpa. Why do we choose elephants to hold them up? Because they are more powerful than other creatures. And you're going to need it if you're going to wipe out your bad deeds. So that's supposed to be a joke. Okay. Captain Digpa Dakme Topchela Tendel Kineya. Tendel normally means dependent origination. In a very tiny percentage of the cases, it means auspicious power. You know, like that. Metaphoric auspicious power. If you put an elephant under the tree, it's Tendel. So that meaning of Tendel is like good luck or auspicious. It doesn't mean dependent origination. Many people have mistranslated that term. Okay. Tendel kineya. Phasonge kundok chakseni mindawa mangma. There is a custom of picturing the 35 Buddhas in differing colors and with differing mudras, you know, hand gestures. And they each have their specific color and they each have their specific hand gesture. If you're interested, I can give you the list. But this Pabongkor Rinpoche says, let's not worry about that right now because that's not the main thing. Let's just kind of make them all similar and go ahead with the whole thing. Okay. By the way, the source of the colors and shapes is in that tanka, that painting, which you guys can't see, but you can imagine. On the upper left is a circle, a round cluster of guys. Those are the 35 Buddhas, okay? And there's a beautiful story. As you know, Jetsun Kapa did go on a long retreat with his disciples, and it was a very controversial thing. He was already a very famous teacher, and he already had thousands of students. And then Manjushri came to him in a vision and said, "You're famous. You are admired everywhere. You know, you are affecting all of Tibet. Time to go into solitary retreat." And Tsongkhapa's like, no, they need me, you know. And Manjushri says, shut up. You're going to retreat, you know, long retreat. And he's like, and there was a little tension. When you read the story, there was a little tension. And finally, Jatsangkhapa agreed to go into a long retreat. And then he said, you can only take 8 disciples. They're called Namdakye, the 8 pure ones. And I imagine there was a lot of jockeying for the position in the leather boat, you know. But he only took 8 of thousands and took them out to retreat. And one of their main practices in that long retreat was the 35 Buddhas. So I thought it was sort of auspicious that the day that we did the Lamrim here, we hit the 35 Buddhas. You're like the pure 32 or whatever. No, you're like hardcore, you know. So it seems like this practice has come auspiciously somehow, okay? I never did this practice. I never followed this practice. Rinpoche did not emphasize it. Jetsokapa did. And the reason we know there are colors and all that is that later on, they were restoring a temple that had been, got old, and it needed painting, and it had a painting of the 35 Buddhas, and the painters came to Jetsongkhapa and said, you know, how do we paint them? And he said, he closed his eyes, he says, okay, the first one is red, and he's got his hand is like that, and he was seeing them. And then when they finished the temple, restoring the temple, and there was a huge, mural on the wall of all the 35 Buddhas. And then they held a rabne, which is what we did for this corridor, which is to consecrate the ground and remove obstacles. So they held a rabne. And there was a meditator named Chagna Dorje. He was like 35 miles away or something. He was meditating. And suddenly he saw the 35 Buddhas for the first time, you know. And he was all happy, you know. He said, oh man, I see the 35 Buddhas. I said, hey man, that's cool, but we gotta get somewhere. We gotta get somewhere today. And he's like, no, stay for a while. And they said, no, Jetsokoff is consecrating a temple. They put a photo of us there. We gotta go. You know? It's like this story that they ran away. And, so that's the 35 Buddhas. So he says, of course, they all have their own colors and their own mudras. But to make it easier to visualize, he suggests grouping them in 5 groups of 7. Okay, he suggests group them in 5 groups of 7 and make each group correspond to one of the 5 Dhyani Buddhas. And then just use those colors of that family, of that Buddha family. So you guys have been working heavily on the 5 Buddha families, I'm sure. So it'll be easier for you to visualize the 35 Buddhas, because 7 you make blue, 7 you make green, 7 you make red, 7 yellow, 7 white, like that, okay? So no stress. It's much easier, all right? And I put, so now you guys should pull out that piece of paper. If anybody forgot to bring it, or the other extras, Nicole or Ram. I handed it out the first night, but I talked too much. We didn't get to it till now. Okay, it's good. If you don't have a copy, raise your hand. Anybody need one here? 1, 2, 3, 4. 4 more copies over here. There's a cool one with Rob's. Well, anyway, I'm not going to tell you about that. You guys got 4 more? That's it on this side. Okay, so we're going to go through this kind of not so quickly, probably. Let me watch it. I have to stop it. Yeah, never mind. 35 Buddhas for purifying old bad karmic seeds. I got them from a text by Jetsongkhapa. And then his disciple Gyaltsabje added some information, including an explanation by Lord Atisha of which Buddha relates to which kind of bad deed. The reason I put those in, I added those from Gyaltsab Jay's work, is that I thought you might want to specialize. There are three options for doing the 35 Buddhas. You can focus on one, you can do all 35, or you can do one for a while and then do the second one for a while. So there, he's going to mention the three options, okay? But I thought, and for all of us, if you have a particular bad deed that you're working on, right? And he's going to say later that you can deduce bad seeds, right? That's a very important practice. Detective work, right? People are criticizing Geshe Michael in the press, for example. Then that must have some kind of karmic seed. I don't remember what I did, but it's coming. Therefore, I must have that seed. You know, I can deduce that I have that seed, even if I can't remember, you know, writing articles about people. But I can deduce that I must be doing something like that. Then I would choose the Buddha here who seems to fit that the best. If that's of concern to me, if it hurts me or it bothers me, then I can pick the Buddha here who relates to that, most closely relates to that. And as I said yesterday, the bad deeds listed here are the most extreme, okay? He's got the five immediate bad deeds, which are the five most serious sins in Buddhism, like killing your father, killing your mother, splitting up the Sangha, killing someone who reached Nirvana, or trying to hurt a Buddha, okay? Those are extremely... So, you know, let's say you've been... I don't know. Let's say you've been divisive in your speech, right? You have to see around you schisms or splits between people, just between friends or between parents and children or things like that. If you are seeing that around you, that means you have that seed. Then you would want to go to the Buddha who specializes in schisms. Even though you didn't split up a Dharma community, if you are forced to live in a family where two of the family members are always estranged from each other, then that's your seeds to see that. Even though you're not part of that estrangement, you have to witness it, which means you also have some of those seeds. So in that case, go to the Buddha who relates to schisms and focus on that one. How do you focus on them? I suggest just learning their name and saying the formula here. So let's take the first Buddha here. I bow down to the Buddha, Nageshvara Raja, Lord and King of the Nagas, who has gone that way to purify 8 eons of bad karma. Okay? An eon is, I don't know, 10 to the 64th power years is the basic unit involved in an eon, but it's not an eon. It's just a tiny bit of an eon, okay? Then the numbers run out after that, okay? But I don't know why you'd want to do the 8 eon guy if you could do the 10,000 eon guy. So personally, I'm going to focus on the 10,000 eon guy, which happens to be Buddha Shakyamuni, okay, in the second verse. But this formula is standard, okay? Why? It comes from a sutra. And I put the name of the sutra there for you, an exalted sutra of the Greater Way, which was requested by Upali, and which sets forth the teachings of vowed morality. Aya, Arya Vinaya, Vinishchaya Upali Paripurcha Nama Mahayana Sutra. Okay, so this is a famous Vinaya work. It's in the Kangyur, and Jigme's been cataloging those. She finished the Kangyur, I think. No, I finished the Vinaya. You finished the Vinaya. She finished the Prajnaparamita. She's cataloging it. So she's now into the sutras, and she got to this one. So I took it out of the sutra, the original sutra. I took this is the formal formula. This is what you're supposed to recite when you do this practice, okay? So if you want to do all 35 Buddhas, you recite all these pages. If you want to focus on a splitter karma or a criticism karma or something like that, you can focus on that, okay? And it's the same formula. I bow down to the Buddha so-and-so who has gone that way. And then you go down to the next Buddha. So you traditionally you could do one prostration for each Buddha, for example, or one Surya Namaskar, okay, like that, okay. And I think, you know, just throw it into your bag of tools. Try it for a couple of weeks. Use it on some obstacle you have, block that you have. And then you don't have to do it forever, and you don't have to, you know. It's just another tool for your practice, for your retreat. If you're having, I think, a subtle, if you've reached some kind of subtle, like, it feels to me like the edge of a bubblegum bubble. It's like if you could just push through that, you'd go much higher, you know? It's like a little veil or something, and you just got to push through it. Then try this for a couple of weeks and see what happens, okay? All right. I'm not going to take a break. I was supposed to take a break. We got 20 minutes, so, okay. But we'll still do the thing we were going to do. I'll talk about that. Dambo Mi Kyöpe Namba Chen Dun. So I've added the five Dhyani Buddhas here and I split them up for you in the small print, okay? The first seven relate to Mi Kyöpa, which is Akshobhya, right? And they are blue. In the right hand is a Vajra and in the left hand is a bell. All 35 have a bell in their left hand. The right hand mudra changes, or chaksen, okay? The instrument in the right hand changes, okay? Dene Rimshin Namnang Varochana, appearances, is white, and in the right hand a Dharma wheel, okay? Then Upagme, sorry, Rinjung, which is Ratnakara, source of jewels, yellow, right hand holds a jewel, gemstone. Then Upagme, Amitabha, red color, and in the right hand, a lotus. Also, if you know the Buddha family names, you can see them coming here. Okay. Dundruba Moga City, right hand, a sword. Nam Chen Dunre Ja, seven Buddhas for each group of the five. Okay. I think it would be useful to review the, is it 19... vows of the five families, right? Because a lot of our higher practices come from these five families, including practice with a partner, right? I got this initiation in when? I got Bhairava in 1978 from Ling Rinpoche, the Dalai Lama's senior tutor. He gave me permission to have a partner. He gave me the 19 vows of the five families when he came to New Jersey. But these five families are the source of much of our higher practice and yoga practice, including Amitabha is very important for China, all of China, a billion people in China, 1.4? Many of them are very in love with Amitabha practice, and this is the source of that practice. So if you're going to teach in China, which some of our esteemed students are doing, I think, when you guys leave when? Soon? When you, end of June? End of May. Two retreatants who went on the fast track. We have four retreatants here who went on fast track, and they're already out doing their teaching. But Jessica and Stefan are going to China at the end of the month. And yeah, and Daniel served beautifully in Guadalajara. He's teaching. And where are you? And Chuki's been teaching all the classes here at Diamond Mountain. Yeah. So it's pretty awesome. That's all the retreatants who aren't over here. You know, mostly. Anyway, so those are the 35, and you can, now he's going to make some notes about them. And that's how to visualize them. You can go through the other details of the colors and when I think of Vairochana or I think of Amitabha, I like to think of the vows that relate to them and the practices which relate to them. So partner practice relates to one of the five. And your Bel and Dorje relate to another one of the five and things like that. And you know those correlations, and I would use them. I would continue to use them, okay, as you do this practice. Let's see. Dangbo dun le shak tupni lame tuka de chok. In the first set of seven is Shakyamuni Buddha. And for him, it's okay. Chok means it's okay. This is chok without the M. Chok means it's okay if you just use the Buddha who's already in the center of this Lama's heart, Jatsokapa's heart. Okay. Then the other groups, you have to picture them all like the first seven look like that Dhyani Buddha, and the next seven look like that Dhyani Buddha. You see what I mean? So they all look like Vairochana in one group ascendant. They all look like Akshobhya in the other group of seven. Okay? And you don't, they all do have their own separate colors and mudras, but he suggests make them relate to the Dhyani Buddhas. And there must be some reason he's doing that also. Okay. But he makes an exception. Okay, he makes one exception. He says, Luwangi Gyalpo, Dimba Yankar, the one named Nagashvara. Which one is that? The first one, okay, Nagashvara. From the throat on up, he's a white color, and the rest of his body is blue. When we say that an angel has a white color, a blue color, a green color, don't think someone's painted green like that. Okay, by the way, it's customary never to point to an angel painting. You're supposed to go. And, it's just tradition. It's an ancient Asian tradition. Okay, you don't ever point to it. You go, you know. So these beings, one is white, one is green, you know, blue. That's because of the limitations of mineral paints in Tibet in 1000 AD, okay? If those painters were around nowadays, they'd be using neon light. Because it's the idea is the light's coming from inside of them. So I don't want you ever to visualize an angel as painted blue. Like they were all shiny like a light bulb and then somebody painted them blue. And now they're just a matte blue, you know? Don't ever think like that. They are glowing. They don't have a sun and a moon in their lands because they don't need them, because they are a living flashlight. Some of the retreatants are developing this skill in small places when they walk around. Anyway, so that one, that first Buddha, don't picture him like the group that he's in, which is Akshobhya, right? Keep him his own specific color, which is white above the throat and then blue light below the throat. Why? I looked it up, okay? I was curious. Why do they make an exception for the first one? And it was that, I believe it's because that's the first one that Jatsokapa met. And that maybe there's some kind of auspicious thing about picturing him as he was met by Jatsokapa. So he was the first angel that Jatsokapa met in person and saw his actual form. Okay? Then there's each one is making a different hand gesture, right? A mudra. And the chakya for the first one is Ludulwe chakya. Mercedes talked about the word dulwa. It means to tame or to control. Lu means a naga, a serpent, a water serpent. Probably, of course, I believe it corresponds to the long in Zhongwen, right? I think so. But anyway, the mudra is like this, okay? So that Buddha, the first of the 35, picture them with their actual hand gesture, which is called the gesture of bringing nagas under your control, okay? If you could bring a naga under your control, you could have a swimming pool here. That's the idea. We're working on it. Okay, kutsar jari kitsum. So jari. Speaking of swimming pools, let me finish quickly, then I'll do my swimming pool pitch, okay? Jai nubache kyan dambo chulung gumbar. when Jetsun Kapa was at Chulung Monastery, he did very intense retreat practices. Kapshita Sakchang Lashindu Dubar, he was working really hard on collecting new good karma and getting rid of old bad karma. Zeni Luangi Gabuto Marshall Sikh. And then in that moment, he saw the first of the 35 Buddhists. And that's why we leave him that way. Dene Sange Sumju Songasha. Oh, that's from a commentary. Okay, that's not from this text. Tunga Shape Dun Lukla Shel She Sum Le. There are three oral instructions for how to recite these 35 Buddhas. Sutra, really. This is the guts of the sutra. First one, une jug zokpa tsarre tunne sokpa dang. The first system is simply to get a hold of that sutra and read the whole sutra from beginning to end. I can give you this sutra if you want. It's not very big. I haven't translated it, but you could recite it in Tibetan. But it's just to go through it from beginning to end and not chop out the prostration part, which is where we are here. Okay. Second system, Tumbane Riwan Gyalpa Par La Sare Tsite Tsennam Bashik Dap Gyor Dun Dun. Then you could just make a certain number of, just recite their names. Okay, you could just recite their names. Like you could stop on Shakyamuni and keep reciting Shakyamuni over and over. And the third system is Yangna Tungsha Nyangat Samshiktu. Oh, and he says all the way to Shailendra Raja, which is number 35. Okay. Or you can go through, what I kind of like to do would be to, you recite the prostration to the first Buddha. Then you go to the second one, and when you hit the one that you care about the most, you hang on there for a while and recite the prostration, and then stop and then go on to the rest. Okay, so those are his suggestions. He gives you dhamka. What's dhamka? Dhamka means your choice. What do you call that? What's the English idiom? You get to choose how you do it. No, there's a colloquialism. Your call, maybe. Okay. He says, I like the one where you hang on certain Buddhas for a long time because it's hard for me to do 35 different Buddhas quickly, one after another. To visualize them is hard for me. He says, I like hanging on one Buddha for a while. Dunluk nikala jugdu tsen nam sine deda la sopa mencheki jugdu wa tsarchiki chok. You can also recite the end of the sutra if you want to after the 35. But you don't have to. Deshin shepa deda ki tsen rere yang jepe penyam mambo yupe. There are many benefits of each name. Deda tik sokla tene ngepache. You can consult the commentaries if you care. So I did. Because I always felt uncomfortable with this practice, because I know some Buddhist groups really emphasize it, and I always felt sort of retarded that I didn't know what they were doing. And so I went and studied it. And so those are the benefits that are listed by Gyaltsab Jay, okay? Which I put on the paper for you. By the way, I owe you two mantras from yesterday. I'll try to bring it tomorrow at my breakfast party. I mean at our holy ritual. Then I'm gonna leave the text there. He goes on to eight more Buddhas you can add, which is just gonna make you more confused. So, but we'll do them later. Okay, they are medicine Buddha. There's a group of medicine Buddhas. Okay, so if you want their names, I can give it to you tomorrow also, and you can add them. And then they help with medical problems. So there are eight Buddhas that relate to medicine, starting with Menla. Right, which means medicine Buddha, medicine guru, Baishajya guru, right? The medicine Buddha. Then I just wanted to say, I mean, we're having a board meeting after this. We're never sure how to spell the first word. It's true. No, our board meetings are exciting. mostly too exciting. But, Anyway, and the board is going to, we're going to discuss, and I'll present the ideas to you tomorrow, to the retreatants. But, you know, we're working very hard on what do we do next at Diamond Mountain, you know, because a year looks like a long time, but you're going to discover that it's not, and it just melts away like nothing. And we have to think of where we go from here. Where do we take this university from here, you know? Universities in general in the world are shifting radically as the internet becomes more powerful. So fewer and fewer people are going to universities or going to work, for that matter. No, most people, I believe 40% of the office space in Phoenix is empty. 40%. And I don't think there's any way it's ever going to be filled. They're starting to make churches out of them and, you know, like weird things because nobody needs them because everybody can work at home on the internet. So there's no reason. And society has adjusted to that. We thought we would be lonely, but it's okay. We go to Starbucks and we type next to other people. And I'm not kidding. People work at Starbucks or stuff, you know, or at the library and they meet other people there, but they don't meet the people they work with all the time. And that's the way it's happening. I don't think that large amounts of people will come out to the desert to study something that they can sit at home and study online. And we have all our courses online and, you know, and many universities are shrinking physically because it doesn't pay to, it's too expensive. I mean, to broadcast a teacher sitting in Florida to the MIT offers all their courses for free online. They won't give you credit, but any person in the world can join an MIT course. And that was a very brave decision that they made. And it's paying off. They have the largest endowment of almost any university in the United States. And they're attracting the most talented people from all over the world to actually become students, you know. So I think we will always continue courses here, but I don't see that large amounts of people would come here to do something they can do online if they have a family or something like that. So but as a retreat center, there will come to be a greater and greater need in the world, for the sanity of the world, for people to get away from their internet, you know? And so there is a huge, the New York Times ran an article recently about retreat centers are coming into great vogue. And there's a huge demand for places to go where you can be quiet. Canyon Ranch around the corner is a resort that charges, I think, $1,200 a day to teach you some yoga and take away your laptop. And they have a swimming pool. And they teach spiritual, you know, pseudo, you know, anyway, that's how I perceive it. They teach New Age stuff. And it's sweet, but it's, you know, to me it's a little shallow, but it's good. It's good for people who don't have anything. And So there's a great demand growing for that, and I believe that if you had a place like this that had, due to your kindness, had facilities for people to stay, and especially if you could go to that place and just show up and say, I want to do a weekend retreat, what do I do? And then they could show you an ancient Tibetan practice that fits your job and your family and your situation and is authentic and can get you some cool results in your real life by spending 3 days here or 5 days here. To have a staff of people who've been through deep retreat and can intake strangers. And or we have huge demand from our overseas groups, the DCI groups around the world. I don't know. In Guadalajara, it was the French came, Israelis, big Bulgarian group, Russians, Chinese, Singaporeans, Taiwanese, Malaysians, did I say Germans? Anyway, we have a big demand for that. So I think it's going to be really wonderful to have a place where people can come and they know that that's an authentic lineage, and they know that they can get away from their life, and they can. And then our dream has always been to offer free retreats also. Like, those would be for charge and we would pay our staff, but it wouldn't be $1,200 a day. I mean, it'd be some kind of sweet thing that people could afford. And then we would like to, like, invite single mothers from Tucson who have a child, and we'll watch the child for 3 days. And we want to make it sweet. We want to make it like fresh linens and a nice towel, thick towel, not those hotel towels. And, you know, like pamper a poor mom who has a welfare mom, pamper her for 3 days. And no pressure to be a Buddhist, you know, like just come. If you want to take a yoga class, here's a yoga class. You don't have to sign up for any religion or any particular group or anything. Just come. We'll feed you breakfast in bed. You know, you can take a swim in our swimming pool. You know, you can go for a hike. You know, if you want to do some retreat, then we have 10 qualified people here, and they can buddy up with you and take you on a little retreat. You know, like that. So I think that's the way it's going to evolve here. You know, there will be classes, but even the yoga stuff we're doing now is we're opening large online yoga studios. You know, the online classes being filmed this week in Taiwan are targeted for 3 billion people. They're in Spanish, Chinese, and English, and they're not going to be in a physical space only anymore. They'll be both, you know. So there's filters. You can say, I want a half-hour Anusara class, and I want Geshe-la talking for 20 minutes of it. Or like that, you know. So, you know, and we have maybe 100 teachers, 100 different teachers to choose from. And you could also be on that. You know, you just submit, we'll just film you teaching a class, and then you're on there. And then we'll pay people. We'll pay the teachers, whoever takes their class. We just pay the teacher. So that this place will become, I think, a specialist, specializing in retreat, from a pampered weekend retreat to a, you know, 3-year retreat in the back where John and Earl will still be there. Coco gets to come out. But you know, I could see that the last cabins are deep retreat, and we still have some hardcores back there. And then the closer you get to here, the more they're more like 1 month, and then 1 week, and then 3 day, and then like that. So I think as a board, we're faced with two great, exciting jobs coming up. One is to create that center out of this place, you know, which starts with a kitchen. We don't have a good cafeteria and kitchen. And as anyone knows, that's the core of a retreat center, is the food. Like, I've been to many retreat centers, and if the food's no good, you just want to leave the first hour, you know. You just want to get out of there, you know. But if someone's cooking really good, like if John Brady's there cooking all that stuff he was talking about. That's our first focus. We're fundraising. We already have $30,000. We're digging. Nicole has placed the building. We'll be digging the septic, I think, soon, and the electrical lines. And we'll have a nice cafeteria and a kitchen, you know, a nice, shiny kitchen. So that's our first big job for our board. And then the second big job is to bring you out of retreat skillfully, you know, so that you don't go crazy. You know, in the prisons, they give you your wallet that you had 25 years ago. Nothing in it is worth anything anymore. And they give you $50 and they drop you off at the bus station in Tucson, and that's it. And so we're thinking to give you 60. No, just kidding. No, I mean, I think it's going to be a skillful mix of, we have to find you housing if you wish it, in any city you wish in. We have to give you a grubstake, certain amount of cash, I think. Personally, this is how I see it. We have to help you if you want to have a career or a job, career training, in whatever career you want to do. If you want to be a teacher, I think we have to set up teaching opportunities for you when you come out, you know, with people to do your posters and stuff like that. And then I'm thinking Jessica and Stefan and I had a conversation last night that I think also book publishing, we can help you with that. You know, if you have a book. Nowadays, most people publish their own books. I cut my contract with Doubleday because you can publish your own book and Doubleday gives you 5%. Amazon gives you 100%. So, and you can just put it on Amazon. It doesn't matter anymore. So those books, we can teach you how. We have a whole setup where we can publish your books and stuff like that. So that's my dream, is to bring you out. We have to do it in a gentle way and a successful way. The success of this retreat is not only gauged by their realizations during the 3 years. It's by what they become in the 3 years after that. And that's what we have to focus on. Stefan and Jessica are helping a lot with that and the process. So we have to see you successful 4 years from now, very successful and serving successfully. So the board has these two great challenges to work on. And so we have to go to our board meeting. It takes money. It always does take money. If you're in the mood, we could try to say maybe to raise $3,000 a day for the kitchen or something. I don't know. That'll pay for like one fancy egg beater. I don't know. But if you would like to help, the courses here are free. Everything at this university is free. I will encourage you to donate something. I'm not pressuring you. So don't say, oh, I went there and they said it was free and then they handcuffed us, you know, to a chair until we gave them $50. It's not like that, okay? It takes money to run the place. It takes money to feed these guys. Some of them are living on air already, but the others are a little slow. So, but if you can help, where do they put checks and money, Nicole? Do you have a bag or something? A hat? There's a glass jar in the set. And then, and help. Just help, okay? Give something, okay? It's just a matter of courtesy, I think, to a place. And it's kind of like noble to help, okay? We're all from different places. We all have different incomes. Some of us have very, very different incomes. But give something. Everybody gives something, okay? Put something in the jar. It doesn't matter how much. It's just kind of like good karma for you and for us, you know. It's just kind of like honors the place and the teaching, okay? All right. Is anything else? Oh, so we have a... Where is she? We have a birthday today, so that'll be the last thing. Venerable Beth. You guys haven't seen her venerable yet. But it's her birthday today, Udpa. So we're going to... Are you ready, Uncle Phil? Wait, we've got to get the candles here. You will be able to see the candles blown out, but you won't be able to see the blower. So we have to get it right here, Scott. Okay. Can you come over and... I promise it's her. Okay, go, Venerable Phil. Happy birthday to you, happy birthday to you, happy birthday dear Beth, happy birthday to you. Yeah, you better give me a piece.
Okay.
Here's your prediction for the rest of your life, okay? It's not a big thing. Nowadays, when somebody says Buddhist monk, what pops into our mind are the outer forms of a Buddhist monk, the shaved head, the long flowing robes. But take a closer look at the robes and you'll get a closer idea of what it really is to be a monk. Up close, you can see that the lower skirt, for example, is actually a quilt work of interlocking patches. Okay, that's pretty cool. In the old days, a monk was required to take their clothing out of a garbage can. They were required to use only clothing that was gotten out of the garbage. What do you call it? Bin dipping? Dumpster diving. Dumpster diving. So you were required to get old jeans out of dumpsters, cut up pieces that were still usable, and dye them red, and then patch it together. So that's your prediction. I don't know what's the meaning, but work on it. She just became ordained not too long back. I'm sorry. Never mind. Okay. You ready, Phil? Did we do this yet? Did we do our fight? No, you're going to do that, but we're going to do a mandala. Okay? Go.
Kone kondu pelwa shon.